friends, my name is Lauka, and I am the author of the historical novel Returning East. This novel is set on an ocean liner in Hong Kong and in China in 1954. I am very fascinated by Asia in general, South Asia, Southeast Asia, East Asia, and in particular China, where I lived for about 6 years. But I know I am not the only one. And this is why I teamed with other authors who also wrote at least one novel set in Asia or with an Asian protagonist. And because I was curious to hear more about their connections with this region, I decided to ask them and to record a few podcasts. Now, I am not a professional podcast host, so I hope you will forgive any mistakes I may have done. But the conversations I had with those authors are very interesting, and I hope you will enjoy listening to their experiences and to hear more about their books and about my book as well. In this last podcast, I have Lee Kaiser and Nola Lee Barr with me. I hope you'll enjoy our conversation. Hello, everyone. Today, I am with two other authors who joined the promotion Awesome Asia. I have here Lee Kaiser and Nola Lee Barr. So I'm very excited to have you here both. Thank you very much for coming. And first of all, I would like you both to introduce yourself. Maybe Nola, do you want to start?
Sure, I can start. Thank you, Laura. I'm very happy to be here. My name's Nola. I'm a mother of two. And I'm basically living my dream of writing stories and being able to share them with everybody. I write family sagas that span women's fiction and young adult, and they all have a bit of sweet romance in it. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other thing is, I guess all my books have either an all-Asian cast or half-Asian, half-Caucasian, or there's always some sort of theme in there with an Asian character.
So you suit perfectly the promotion very well. Thank you, Nola. What about you, Lee?
Yes, my name's Lee Kaiser, and I'm Canadian. I'm really new to writing. I'm retired now, and I started writing after I was retired just about 3 years ago. I write women's fiction, and it just so happens my debut novel, Sutra of the Pearl, is set in Asia. So that's how I am able to join this promotion. My next book is in Europe, so, right? I'm single. I've never had a husband or children. I have a noisy dog. And I'm here in Mexico actually right now. This is where I've been spending the entire summer, up in the mountains, not the beach.
Okay, well, there are good things about being retired, right? So you can you are master of your own schedule.
Oh, it's wonderful. I was a journalist. There was just no way I could have been writing books when I was a journalist. It consumed my life. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah.
Well, that's interesting because you said you are new to writing, but if you're a journalist, actually you already wrote. So you're maybe new to writing a whole book, but also articles, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people think you have a leg up if you're a natural, you know, if writing is second nature to you. It's different, but there is one good point. I call it writing on demand. When you're a journalist, you have to write on demand. You better have something at the end of a workday. So from that point of view, it's easier. Yeah.
Okay. And so how did you start creative writing? How did you start with this novel? Why you started writing a whole book?
Well, I guess you're asking me like, how did I launch into writing after okay.
Because at one point, probably you sat down and said, oh, I want to write a book, or I wanted to try something, right? That is not journalistic.
Well, it was a little different than that. When I retired from journalism, I never want to sit down in front of a computer and write all day again. I've had enough of this, right? But I think, like a lot of writers, there was a traumatic experience for me. Mm-hmm. And I started to journal that, and it turned into a book. That happens a lot, I think. Mm-hmm. And that traumatic experience was working with street dogs in India.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when I came back home from that, I really needed to clear all the horrific things I'd seen, and I started to write about it. And then I realized, hey, I really like this.
Okay. So if I understand you correctly, you basically started writing as a sort of therapy, and then you realized that it had a nice storyline, and you turned it into a novel.
Yeah, basically. I guess that's it. I had a lot of time on my hands too. I was retired, and the novel is fairly autobiographical. Mm-hmm. as far as the parts about the dogs, mm-hmm. but it is a work of fiction.
Yes. Perfect. Very interesting. And Nola, what about you? How did you start writing, creative writing?
For me, it was, I had wanted to write when I was younger, but it never happened. I found stories where I wrote like a paragraph here, a paragraph there, and that was pretty much it. But when my second kid came, I was a full-time mom. And all of a sudden, I wasn't working anymore. And that was really weird because I'd always worked. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing webinars. And I came upon a webinar for self-publishing school one day. And I learned that it is possible to self-publish now. And there was a whole community out there that would help each other and answer questions. And I was like, well, I had some time now. I wasn't under a boss or a full-time job. So I had my own time to kind of carve out. And so I joined and I started writing this story that I had an idea with. And truly, it's because I had a mentor who told me I had to write 20K before I talked mm-hmm. to him in 2 weeks, that the book finally got written in a year.
Okay.
And so that's how the first book came out. I never thought it would actually happen. And so ever since then, it's been just like a dream come true. Like, I've always wanted to be an author, so now I can, and it's doable.
Yeah.
So that's how I started really writing stories and being able to share them with others. Yeah.
And which year was that when you first published your first book?
I published my first book in 2018.
Okay.
So not that long ago. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just published this year my first book, so.
And that's a big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal getting your first book out there.
Absolutely, yes. And what is your connection to Asia?
I'm a first-generation American. My parents immigrated from Taiwan.
Okay.
And that's basically my connection to Asia. Yeah, being able to visit Taiwan every once in a while, and growing up in a household that with being first generation. Yeah.
Yes. And so do you still speak the language you're already the generation who lost a little bit this skill?
No, I do speak it. My mom used to pretend she didn't know English, and so I had to speak it at home. But I have to say, yeah, my husband is Caucasian, and I have a hard time at home speaking Chinese to the kids. So they might be the generation where they have some of it, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to keep it there, but it definitely got exponentially harder.
Yeah, I understand, definitely. Especially a language such as Taiwanese, Chinese, that they are.
Yeah.
And what about you, Lee? What is your connection to Asia?
Well, I mentioned India, but actually my time in Asia started decades ago. I started going to Japan in the 80s to teach English. And and I had my degree in journalism by that time. So I also worked at English language newspapers in Tokyo.
Yes.
I spent 5 years there, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I stayed in Asia and I went traveling for 3 years, traveling and working in Hong Kong, Thailand, China, Tibet, Nepal. I went down to New Zealand and hung out there. So it was, yeah, I'm very familiar with Asia.
Please finish.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that actually the idea for the podcast came exactly because I went to your website and I saw your very interesting pictures, you know, Japan in the 80s and so on. And I said, oh, but that's very interesting. I wonder what she did there. And I said, okay, I'm sure that other authors also have interesting stories. And this is why I said, oh, I think I want to start, you know, to ask them questions. And this is why I'm here. Yeah, that we are all here. So,
yeah.
And do you see then lots of differences between these Asian countries? I'm sure that they are not all the same if you go to Nepal or Japan, China, and so on.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I guess someone who's never been to Asia thinks of it as like North America. Oh, everybody's the same. Oh, no, it's completely different. And especially the effects of communism. Mm-hmm. So, you know, China is completely different than the your experience of the other places. When I went to Tibet, it was wide open. There was no controls like now. Now you have to ride in a bus. I was just like on my own. Mm-hmm. And it's very different now, I guess. so that's kind of sad to see that. And I have lots of friends who they want me to travel back to Asia, but there's so many other places in the world to see. I'm going to Africa next. I've never been there. So, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And are you planning to set more books in Asia or you want to move? No, you said the second book will be in Europe, but you still have so much experience there that I'm sure there are stories that you can tell about Asia.
Yeah, actually, you're reminding me of something when you asked me how I started to write. Another British woman that I worked with in Tokyo, became very good friends with, she returned from Japan and wrote a book, a novel. And I read it and thought, gee, wow, I could have written this. So I thought, I think that happened before I went to India even. And I guess I should. I spent 5 years there. It was a long time ago though. So
the more interesting now, because then you are an eyewitness of that period.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised you mentioned the Japan pictures, because of all my pictures that I have, hundreds of them on there, I thought the Japan pictures were the least interesting.
I don't think so. And this is, you know, just that, yeah, people like different things, right? But I'm really interested in Japan. I'm planning to visit there again in 2024. Mm-hmm. And I like Japanese writers, Banana Yoshimoto in particular. And yeah, I'm very curious actually to know more. So this mm-hmm. is very fascinating, the pictures.
Yeah, they're not tourist pictures. I did not put Mount Fuji on there. They're like pictures inside my house, parties, clubs. Yeah, I guess they're different.
That's what people normally don't see.
Yeah. Yeah, especially it was the 80s. I went to a Filipino drag club all the time. Mm. And I mean, that was like almost taboo in those days, right? Mm-hmm. People who were different sexual orientation, it was like, no, we don't want to know about that. So, yeah.
You also had pictures of, I think, a street festival, so a ceremony. And indeed, the pictures inside the house also are interesting, because not everybody has the opportunity to actually really see what a Japanese household looks like.
That's true, you know. That's really true. It's very different from what we're used to. Even in China, they don't sit on the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, Japanese houses are, you step in and you step up into the house. So mm-hmm. you take your shoes off. So it's clean. The floor is clean. And you go in under your kotatsu table in the wintertime to keep warm. So that's, very different.
Yeah. Well, I must say that I am now in my studio, and we do have a tatami here in the studio. You know, when we moved into the new flat 5 years ago, I decided, no, I want to have a tatami here, and this is what we have.
Those are fantastic. Ah. I love them.
Yes, they are. It's a great feeling, especially because do qigong and yoga and meditation, and then, you know, you can do everything on the floor, and love it.
I forgot about that. It seems strange, after I left 5 years and then I wasn't sitting around on the floor anymore, and I my goodness, I remember the first time I got into a bath. And I felt like I was floating in an oil spill or something, because I hadn't showered before.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. And Nola, what about you? I'm interested to hear, what is your experience being a first generation in America? So we're born in America. Do you feel also, how do you say that in English, divided between two cultures? You know, it comes to mind the writer Emmy Tan, which who you probably know, that mm-hmm. her book opened about this this thing of being actually raised as an American, but having the family being quite traditional and quite attached to their culture. Yes.
It's definitely, I definitely felt that growing up. And I know a lot of people who also did. It's definitely you want to be like your peers. You want to be like everybody else in your neighborhood and in your town, and, you know, fit in as a kid. But at home, your culture is so different from everybody else's. I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood, or school as well, until high school. So up until high school, it was definitely, I didn't want to be Asian. I didn't want to be part of the culture that I was growing up in at home. Even though I love my parents and I love my sister and I love, you know, all our family friends and stuff, but it was two different worlds. They were kept separate almost. And it wasn't until high school when I moved into a more predominantly, more diverse, I guess you could say, much more diverse community that I realized that you could be with all these other people and still keep the culture. But by that time, I was very scared hanging mm-hmm. out with Asian people. I didn't know how to act around them. I didn't know what to do.
Okay.
So it was very interesting. And then I got a chance to move to Taiwan for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents are the only ones who left. Our entire family is still in Taiwan. So all my grandparents, all my aunts and uncles, all of my cousins. So it was a great chance to really get to meet them and know them better and then really be immersed in the culture.
Yes.
And because I look like everybody, I immediately was able to just melt right into society. I think I had a family friend who says, as long as I didn't say more than 10 words all together at once, nobody knew the difference. So,
yeah,
it was definitely fun. It was very eye-opening. It was very cathartic. It was, you know, it was really awesome to be part of like the Taiwanese society for a change. It was even weirder coming back to the U.S. Uh-huh. I felt like a foreigner coming back to the U.S. and it took quite a while for me to acclimate back again, even though that's where I grew up and know uh-huh. the best. So it's been very interesting, especially since I moved to the Bay Area 10 years ago. This is probably the biggest area I've ever lived in the U.S. that has a real melting pot of mm-hmm. Asians, all different kinds of Asians, Caucasian, African-American, like everybody. And you're not identified by your race. Mm-hmm. And it makes a huge difference in how you feel about yourself and how you interact with everybody else too.
Yes.
So it's kind of been a moving learning curve, I guess, for my whole life to.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. And what about then now your children? Do you still attach lots of importance to the culture? Are you trying?
I try. Yes. That's one of the biggest reasons we stay in the Bay Area, because they have friends who are like them. They have friends who are half this, half that. There's a lot of Asian culture here, just in the community as a whole, not mm-hmm. just in your family or within a group of friends. It's just integrated into the whole society. And unfortunately for them, they are going to Chinese school. And so they do learn the language there and they learn some culture there. And so we try to make an effort to mm-hmm. make sure that they understand that this is just as important as the culture that they're growing up in.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's something that you grow up and actually makes you rich growing up with two cultures.
Yes. I think it's very beneficial, and I find it lucky that I was able to do that, to have that mm-hmm. ability to grow up in both cultures. And I guess as a child, you compare both of them. And as you get older, you appreciate both a lot more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. And where is your family in Taiwan, if I may ask?
Oh, they are mostly all in Hualien. Hualien yeah. or in Taipei. Yeah. Hualien's a little city on the east coast near the yeah. ocean. Yeah.
I've been there in 2015.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
One of my favorite places in the world.
So. Yeah. Nice. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And how did you do the research for your book?
So that spans from everything that I had just told you about growing up in both cultures. Moving to the Bay Area, I was fascinated that there was all these multi-generation Asian people. I remember the first dinner that we went to, my husband had to tell me to stop staring because there was Asian people who were my grandmother's age, but they spoke perfect English. Like there wasn't an accent at all. And I had never met anybody like that before. Mm-hmm. And so that really got me spurred on to learn more about Asian American history, because there was such a plethora of resources here, people to meet, and then our friends that we've met over the years through kids' schools and stuff like that. And so all of that mixed in with the romance story that I wanted to write. And so I figure, well, why not just mix the two together? So I have a chance to use the information that I've used and write the romance story that I want. And so that led me to start writing the story, and that led to more research into, you know, well, what was life back then for certain people? What do they do? What do they wear? There's libraries here that focus on, you know, California history specifically, or Asian American or Asian history specifically. So it was a very good chance to take advantage of all that.
Yes.
And I have to say, my first book, I thought I was writing a historical fiction. I have since learned, I love learning and researching all this, but I, it only gets to a certain point, and then I just kind of want to write my fiction story and yes. have fun with it.
Yes, I totally understand. Yeah. What about Huli? So you said that your novel is partially also biographical. Did you do also additional research for this novel?
Oh yeah, definitely. I did realize though, afterwards, when I started to research my second and third novel, that how easy it was with the first one, because I knew so much already about India, and also there's scenes, small town Canada, I definitely know about that. That's where I was raised. And there's a lot of Buddhist philosophy in the novel. And I started to get interested in Buddhism in about 2000. Mm-hmm. And to the point where when I retired, before I started writing, I just was spending all my time at Buddhist monasteries all over the world.
Okay.
And yeah, and so... that's second nature to me. There's scenes of, you know, Buddhist monasteries in Tibet, and I've been to them, or northern India, I should say. That part came easy. And, you know, I've even lived at monasteries with nuns in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
For quite a few months. So there's probably maybe a book coming there with, I don't know if you've heard of this famous German Buddhist nun called Aya Kema.
No, I don't know her.
No. Yeah. So it's, she's, I guess, famous in my world. And she was born Jewish. She was spent her childhood at a Nazi concentration camp, and then became a famous Buddhist nun. So I see a story there. I would love to write her.
You could write a story that could be a starting point.
Yeah, I would have to come to Germany.
So. You're welcome. If you come to Berlin, let me know.
yeah, but there's also, I mean, the most, so you know, I said I didn't have to do much research, actually. Well, there's terrorist attacks in my book, and I had to really learn all about the terrorist culture of India and nuclear facilities, because the attack is on a nuclear facility. So there was a ton of research into how nuclear facilities operate and what how vulnerable they are.
Mm-hmm.
I got kind of scared by what I came up with, that the 9/11 attackers were originally thinking of crashing into nuclear facilities. Oh, and it would have been probably worse.
Mm-hmm. Probably, yes. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. Would you like to give us an overview of the book and, you know, either the story or if you want to read the blurb, or in any case where we can find the book? Do you want to start maybe, Nola?
Sure. I have one series out. It's called Skyline Mansions. Skyline Mansion, and it has four books, Forbidden Blossom, Hidden Blossom, Secret Blossom, and Family Blossom. And the last book of the series just came out July 31st. So I'm very excited because I really didn't think this would happen and that I would actually get a whole series out. So the whole story is about Anne and Sebastian, and she is a second generation American, and her grandmother immigrated to the U.S. in 1946. And so a lot of the historical research was on her grandmother to make sure her life was accurate. And it's about how she inherits a multi-billion dollar house and company, and she gets brought into this world that she's never known. Families of the person who gave her the inheritance are jealous or, you know, don't care. But it brings a lot of enemies to her. It brings her, she finds journals of her grandmother, which sparks a whole journey through all four books about finding the rest of her family, realizing that it's not just her mom and her, that she has aunts and uncles and she has cousins. And so it's kind of, it's a whole family saga across the whole four books. And I feel like the second book was probably the most special to me because a lot of the stuff I did in Taiwan, I put in that book.
Is the Forbidden Blossom?
The second book is Hidden Blossom.
Okay, Hidden Blossom. Okay.
Yeah. And then all the books are available on Amazon, in ebook, paperback, and in Kindle Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm active on Instagram and Facebook and BookBub. So that's where the three, and my website, obviously. So those are the places you can find me.
Okay. Yeah. With your name, Nola Libar.
Yes, under Nola Libar. Yep.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. What about you, Lee?
Sutra of the Pearl, of course, is set in India partly and a little bit in Canada. It starts in mm-hmm. Canada. Originally, I thought it was going to be a standalone. And then fellow authors convinced me, no, you better make this a series so it'll sell better. So it's become the first book in a women's fiction adventure series. Okay. Like I said, I'm on number three. So what I've done is they all involve women, strong mm-hmm. women protagonists. That's the connection. And I take a friend from the first book and I spin out a book about her and I've set it in Romania.
Okay.
And then, yeah. And then the third one is I take a friend from that book and it's set in Malta. I'm writing that one right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll hopefully be able to go to Malta. I wasn't able to go to Romania because of COVID.
Yes.
And now there's a war. So yeah, that's not good. So the book is, it centers around this woman. She's a travel writer. She goes looking in India for an ancient biblical scroll in the Himalayas and gets involved with terrorists and falls in love with a westernized Indian man. But at the same time, there's this backstory with her that she comes from a violent childhood. And so she's dealing with that during her journey. And she comes to some conclusions by discovering Buddhism. Taking up Buddhism in India. And so she has a lot of hatred for her mother because her mother actually suffers from mental illness and murdered her baby brother, the protagonist's baby brother, many decades earlier.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And nobody knows except the protagonist. Everyone else thinks it was an accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. So there's one other very interesting point about this first book. I became obsessed with this true story with this Russian adventurer. He discovered, he went on a journey to India and discovered this ancient scroll, a real ancient scroll, that places Jesus in India during his childhood, those missing years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's a whole story in itself. I just kind of brought it in. That's what she's searching for, is this lost scroll, because it was the 1800s when he discovered this. And then, amazingly enough, soon after he discovered it, it disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So who knows? Is the Vatican involved? Who knows? It's still lost. But the actual Hemis Monastery in northern India is a real monastery, and that's where he discovered it. And it's no longer there. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, so that's the first fictionalized version of that story.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And sorry, do you want to add anything else?
Well, the second adventure novel called Towers of the Hungry Ghosts, it actually was picked up by a mid-sized New York publisher.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I'm sure you guys know, you put it out there and then most people eventually go, after, you know, a couple of hundred tries, I'm going to self-publish. And that's what happened with my first book. My second one, I wrote it really quickly. I loved writing it. It was just like, I'm going to throw this out there. It's going to be the second in a series and I'm going to get this thing going. But I think, just for curiosity, I'm going to send it out to 5 different publishers.
Mm-hmm.
Not 100 like the first time. And one of them picked it up and I was like shocked. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. So most of, mostly I communicate with readers through my Facebook. And my Facebook is facebook.com/hermitscribe. And through my author website, where you saw those travel photos, leekaiserauthor.com.
Okay. And the book is on Amazon, paperback, ebook, Kindle.
Yeah, it's everywhere. I went completely wide. I hired someone who really knew what they were doing. I did not self-publish. It wasn't self. It was, yeah, a professional. They put it out on, it's on Amazon. It's you can buy it from any bookseller practically in the world. You can order it in.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and it's everywhere.
Okay. So I think I will wrap it up. I don't know if you want to have one last sentence or one last thought.
This was a lot of fun.
Definitely.
I actually think, this is Lee, I actually think this is more exciting doing this than getting my publishing contract. It's the very first time I've talked about my writing and me after 25 years of interviewing other people. Here I am being interviewed. It's very exciting.
Yes, it is. Actually, podcasting is really a fun way to communicate, you know, to the world what you do. And it gives you also the chance to really think about the questions. You know, I was a podcast host several times, and, you know, through the questions, I actually understood much better my kind of writing or the novel or the connections. So it's really a very good way, you know, to open up your mind.
Right.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Lee. Thank you very much, Nola, for being here today. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I wish you, of course, great success with your novels and with your future novels as well. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.